Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. It's been 25 years now since the state Supreme Court ruled in the landmark Leandro case that all North Carolina public school children have a constitutional right to an opportunity to receive a sound basic education. Unfortunately, thanks to repeated delays and outright refusals on the part of elected officials to act, particularly the Republican leadership of the General Assembly, the court's ruling has largely been ignored. Now, finally, in what could be the ultimate make-or-break moment in this saga, the case will come before the Supreme Court again next month. And recently, in order to find out what will be at stake and why a huge group of community organizations is calling on the court to take strong action, I caught up with a pair of the state's top education advocates, Letha Muhammad, who's executive director of the Education Justice Alliance, and attorney Matt Ellenwood of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project.
Well, Matt Ellenwood, Letha Muhammad, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Yep, thanks for having us.
So we're at a very interesting time right now in the seemingly never-ending saga of the Leandro case. This is this lawsuit that's been going on for decades. We've had repeated state Supreme Court rulings that children in our state have a constitutional right to a sound basic education or an opportunity to receive one. Our General Assembly has steadfastly refused to really fund that adequately, and now it seems to be coming to a head. It's coming back to the state Supreme Court once again. And Matt, I know a big amicus brief has been filed by a variety of interested community groups. Talk to us about sort of where do things stand in the Leandro case? Are we finally on the verge of maybe getting some definitive action?
What we're really looking at is what was the shortfall in terms of the budget that was recently passed. There's the two-year budget that was passed a little while back, and then the budget adjustments that just happened in the legislative short session. So the issue before the court is really whether or not the courts have an authority to direct the legislature to fund some sort of a plan that's actually going to lead to students finally getting the opportunity to receive a sound basic education. The standard's been established in the case ever since it was first decided in the Supreme Court in 1997. So now we're really looking at, you know, what was the impact of the budget process on the funding of the comprehensive remedial plan that was developed in the case that was determined. These are all the elements from pre-K all the way on up to higher education that need to be implemented and funded. And that came out of years of rulings from Judge Lee, the trial court judge who was assigned to this case. And he appointed some consultants from WestEd and from who worked with NC State and did a lot of interviews with parents and educators across the state, try to figure out what are the resources needed in schools to actually meet the constitutional minimum. So we're at the point now, we're trying to figure out what's the court's authority to order the legislature to actually implement this sort of plan that's been developed finally. This is the first time we've really had this kind of comprehensive plan in spite of how long this case has been going on. What's the court's authority to order the implementation of that remedy?
So we've had these experts put together this plan, which is a truly comprehensive plan. I mean, they obviously did endless study and research and interviews, and these experts have come up with a plan that we're trying to get implemented. But Letha, you've been talking to parents and to community groups and really giving them an opportunity to have some input via this amicus brief. And I think, is it safe to say you're finding that a lot of what's in this very in-depth expert report resonates with community groups as well?
I would definitely say that. I'd say community groups, but also with parents and students, right? Mm-hmm. We're thinking about decades, like you said at the onset, Rob, that this case has been going on. And so let's think about what the impact of decades of underfunding has been in our communities, individually on families, on individual students in school districts. And so, you know, the conversations I'm having with parents and students, there's a level of frustration currently operating in our communities, rightfully so, at our General Assembly, right? For not fulfilling the promise of Leandro. We have this excellent comprehensive plan that really lays out how we can move forward as a state and provide our constitutional right for students to receive a sound basic. And we're not even saying an excellent, like, you know, sound basic is the ground floor. Can we get to the ground level so then we can shoot for the stars? And I think from the conversations I've been having, that's the frustration that our folks are feeling currently.
Yeah, it's remarkable. We're now coming on the 25-year anniversary, a quarter of a century since the state Supreme Court ruled in this case. This is an especially important issue, I would take it, Letha, for historically marginalized, at-risk student groups. These are the kids who have really suffered the most for now, well, more than a generation because of the state's refusal to meet its constitutional obligation.
Yeah. And when we think about what we have suffered as a state and a country because of COVID over the last couple of years, the impact of COVID on our education system is just now beginning to be fleshed out, right? And I think we will have even more years to figure that out. But what we know for sure is that those marginalized groups that you mentioned, right, thinking about Black and Latinx or English language learners or students with disabilities or low income families, they are the ones who have already been suffering. And so the impact of COVID on our educational system has the possibility of deepening and widening those inequities that are currently existing. So, you know, time is up. The urgency of the now is upon us for our legislatures, for our lawmakers to do what they must do. And so we're really hoping with this new presentation to the Supreme Court that there will be a ruling that comes out that really favors our communities getting what they deserve.
Yeah, I noted that on July 24th, which actually marks the 25th anniversary of the first Leandro decision, that Robeson County, which is one of the original Leandro school districts that brought this case, one of the low wealth districts, is actually holding a school supply drive to point out the fact that they need to do this. They need donations just to meet these sort of basic supply needs for their county schools. Here, 25 years after the Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional that they didn't have those resources, I take it that's kind of what we're talking about here. We're not talking about, as you said, sort of, you know, sort of pie in the sky. We're just talking about basics, just making our schools basically functional.
Yep. We're talking about having the resources on hand for those kind of low wealth districts to be able to hire effective teachers and hold them there, right? We're talking about having the resources to provide counseling support for students, mental health support for nurses and psychologists, things that we know young people need in order to thrive in our education system. That's like bare minimum.
We're talking with Letha Muhammad, who's the executive director of the Education Justice Alliance and co-chair of the Every Child NC Coalition. We're also talking with attorney Matt Ellenwood, who's director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. So Matt, talk to us a little bit more about where things really stand now. So this is back up to the Supreme Court yet again. There's been orders from lower courts for the General Assembly to appropriate a certain amount of money. The General Assembly's basically said, you can't make us do this. Is it the hope of the folks who filed these briefs in this case that you're participating in that the Supreme Court will step in and say, all right, this is it. You guys have got to do this, or, you know, we're going to take some further action. How do you see this proceeding?
Well, I think that the courts throughout the history of this case have given the legislature every form of deference that you could possibly ask for. That's why we are where we are right now. So I think we are hopeful that the court will see that there's a reason that these provisions are written into the Constitution regarding our rights to a public education system. It actually says wherein equal educational opportunities are provided for all students, which I don't think anyone would think we're providing, even though the standard that came out was sound basic education. So it's past time for the court to do something more affirmative about this. It's sort of an odd constitutional rights. A lot of your constitutional rights don't cost money. They're more about things that they prohibit the government from doing and things like that. This is an unusual one, but it's an important one. That's why it's been in our Constitution, has such a long history, been ratified by voters at different points. This is not something that's optional. It's the whole point of the Constitution is the legislature can't choose not to do this. So yeah, I'm excited. And I think that I'm excited that we were able to file our amicus brief. We worked with the coalition that you mentioned that Letha's co-chair of. We have a lot of kind of research on the likely benefits, particularly for at-risk student groups of implementing and funding the plan, but a lot about our work with the coalition and why we think that the plan really will meet the needs of, again, adversely impacted student groups and communities based on the experiences of people who actually work most closely with them. It's been really exciting to see how much support there is for implementing the comprehensive remedial plan. We've had over 140 organizations sign on in support of this brief. Talked to some attorneys who do this work nationally who said they think that might be the most that anyone's ever seen on a school finance, you know, amicus brief. And I think it shows some of the frustration that's out there, as you've described, some of the basic needs that aren't being met, that this number of organizations from really a broad variety of backgrounds, sizes, and things came together in support of implementing this plan, because people can see it and feel it in their schools now that we've gone too far with some of these budget cuts and policy changes that have had really adverse impact on our schools.
And am I right that there's an actual next month, at the end of August, there will be actual oral arguments in this case before the seven members of the state Supreme Court?
Yeah, that's right. The last week of August, we'll have oral arguments and before the Supreme Court. So I think we're excited that we're getting closer to a resolution in the case. You know, the next step after that would obviously be for them to issue their order. So we're really hopeful that they'll do something, again, to meet the needs of the constitutional rights of students who have had them violated for far too long. And the court, again, has tried to give the legislature all the time, all the deference that anyone could ever expect, and they still refuse to implement the plan.
We're coming to the end of our interview with Matt Ellenwood and Letha Muhammad. I guess, Letha, the fact that this is before the Supreme Court, it's a judicial, it's a constitutional, it's a legal issue, but the members of the Supreme Court are elected too, right? I mean, I wonder if the people you talk to are cognizant and or maybe increasingly aware of the fact that there are seven justices of the North Carolina Supreme Court who are elected by the people of the state. Some of them will actually be on the ballot this year, this November. We know that some of the folks who run the General Assembly might be out to change some of the members of the Supreme Court. I wonder if that's an issue that's starting to sort of become people are starting to become aware of, that this is even the court itself can be kind of a political policy forum.
Yeah, I think most certainly you're right, Rob. And I think Leandro, and what has happened up to this point, especially in the last couple of years, it is an opportunity for us as voters, right, to pay attention to what our elected officials are doing around fulfilling the constitutional mandate of a sound basic education. And I also would just add, I think it's a moral obligation that our lawmakers have failed students in North Carolina. We're taxpayers, right? We're not asking for handouts. We're asking for what our students deserve based off of our state constitution, and we're paying into that. So we're not asking folks to pull money out of the sky or to take it from somewhere else. We are actually paying with our tax dollars to fund our educational system. And we're just calling for folks to do what they're mandated to do per our constitution.
And of course, we might note that at this moment, the North Carolina General Assembly has a large surplus on its hands. There's no need to raise taxes to make this happen. They could make it happen tomorrow if they decide to appropriate the money. It's something, boy, we just really hope at long last this determined advocacy that the two of you have helped lead will finally pay off this fall. Thanks so much for your important work. Letha Muhammad is the Executive Director of the Education Justice Alliance and co-chair of the Every Child North Carolina Coalition. Matt Ellenwood is an attorney, Director of the North Carolina Justice Center's Education and Law Project. Thanks so much for your work. We'll check in later this fall, hopefully to celebrate a positive Supreme Court decision.
Fingers crossed. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Coming up next, we'll talk to reporter Kira Lerner about why Republican-led legislatures are enacting a raft of new crimes related to elections. Don't go away.